Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hey everybody, Ryan McCaffrey with IGN. This is IGN Unfiltered, my monthly or so interview series where I have the privilege of sitting down with the best, brightest, most interesting minds in the games industry. Today is a first. It's the second appearance on IGN Unfiltered for anybody. Todd Howard, good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you again.
Again, yes. A lot has happened in the world. A lot has happened. We're in a new studio of yours, so we're here at Bethesda. Here in lovely Rockville, Maryland, and appreciate you having us to talk about primarily the 10th anniversary of all this, of Skyrim.
It's kind of surreal, right? That we're talking about a game we made 10 years ago still. So, yeah. I mean, for me and everybody here, it's still like, you know, we can't believe it either.
It's getting released again. Again, that's the running gag, but, you know, people keep playing it, people keep loving it, and that's, I want to start is, just kind of, you know, how do you feel about Skyrim in hindsight? It's because a lot of developers that I talk to, they tend to, like, after something comes out, like, we, the media and the fans might think, this is great, we love it. But a lot of developers, as seems to be their nature, seem to, at least initially, only be able to see the flaws. Like, oh, well, there's this thing and there's this thing. But now, with 10 years of hindsight, I'm kind of curious how you feel about that game in general.
Look, we love it. We always loved it. When you're making a game, you know, for us, it takes 4 or 5 years, sometimes a little longer. You get kind of, I don't want to say sick of it, you get numb to what's good about it because you're dealing with getting it working and trying to make it as good as you can.
Right.
And then when you get some space away from it, you can really embrace it for what it is. And we just feel incredibly kind of blessed to still have it in our lives.
Yeah.
And it's taken on this, you know, other life with the community. And, you know, obviously we're still doing some things with it, but it's this blessing that we have. And, you know, we're talking in the studio the other day and what it means to all of us. And there's people, obviously, there are a lot of people here who made that game. And then there are another group that worked on various different versions of it. But then the new people that have come on in the last few years, it's one of the reasons they wanted to join us.
Yeah.
And now they're a part of Bethesda. And so I think it will really be a part of us kind of forever. And it's something that we really, really feel blessed about. And it's incredibly special to still have it be a thing played by millions and millions of people every month. Still one of our top sellers. And it's kind of hard to believe.
I mean, The Elder Scrolls is always, each one has been very well liked. They've been extremely successful. And I, you know, Oblivion was itself this huge leap over Morrowind, certainly in the technology side of things, being an early launch window title for the 360 alongside its PC release. So, you know, when you're trying to go from that and go up, level up again with Skyrim, is that like a, as you look back, was that kind of a daunting thing, or is it just sort of, do you even really think about it in terms of, do you think about Oblivion at all? The game before you're doing Skyrim.
Oblivion was, we were making that as they were making the Xbox 360. So the technology jump was very extreme. It was a very difficult project. And then we kind of overlap a little bit, and we went into Fallout 3. And so you talked about how we feel about the previous game. For us, it's always the previous game. We're usually going from a Fallout into a Fallout between Elder Scrolls.
Well, now you do. Didn't used to be the case.
Yeah. Right. So we went from Oblivion into Fallout 3 and then Fallout 3 into Skyrim.
Right.
But we're on the tail end of kind of that technology window with the 360. And the 360 was kind of our lead platform for Skyrim. But by then, we had this tech base that was very, very solid where we felt, okay, we can really push it now. We're not starting from zero.
Right.
And I think Skyrim really benefits from that when you go back to 2011 and see it on the 360. And obviously, we always done PC stuff, But that really gave us a foothold to really push some things in what we wanted to do with the game.
You know, massive RPGs now, they're as in as ever, but you guys were certainly you've been ahead of the curve on that one for a while. But Skyrim really, in all seriousness, is arguably a big reason why these massive role-playing games are as in as they are. Like, do you think about Skyrim's influence at all, or is that just not something that you
once
allow
in a while,
into your head?
I don't. Once in a while, I'll play a game and I'll see something that is a little bit clearer in terms of, okay, that's how we did that. Or a series that, and it can be something minor. I have a pet peeve in games, and everyone here knows, I don't like mini maps on the screen. So a weird thing where I saw people going to the Rose Line style compass like at the top.
Yeah.
You know, so something like that that you see. I like to play games with mini maps. I just don't like the mini maps because I'm playing the mini map when I play a game.
Yeah.
I stare at it
happens,
and I
right?
drive
yeah.
around. But there are other things too with skill systems or certain flows that you can see in other games. But look, that's one of the things that we enjoy. So I don't dwell on it too much, just once in a while.
You know, kind of, again, with this benefit of 10 years of hindsight and you're thinking about it with this anniversary looming, what do you think the team really got right with Skyrim? Sort of what are its biggest strengths?
I think the tone of the game is really, really strong. There's a lot of fantasy out there, and it's hard to sort of carve you see it and you go, oh, that's Skyrim. So we got that right. The other thing is that no matter who you are, if you like video games and you want to spend a lot of time with one, there's something for you in it. There's a million ways to play it, and the game really lets you express yourself in it. And I think that's actually, I think it's what's great about video games.
Yeah.
Okay, so I can say, I think Skyrim does that really well, but I think that's what video games do really well. And the ones that we really enjoy and that we try to make, that there's a space that the creators have made, and then when you come into it, you are making it better. You're giving yourself to it. And then when you put it down, you have different emotions than you do when you're playing a game where a creator kind of drags you along.
Yeah.
That you feel something about yourself. You think about it when you go to bed. You come back into it. When you accomplish something, you feel like, look what I did today. And that's a real emotion. And I think that's what makes it so powerful.
So how about conversely? What do you think? Was there anything that the team really got wrong or that you still kind of look back and go,
There are a number of parts of it where we don't go deep enough, where it's a veneer in terms of its interactivity.
Yeah.
Look, you can say that about anything. But I think when we think about games and what we would want to do going forward, it's, okay, whatever that system is, you know, how deep can we make it? The other part is the way the AI and the NPCs really react to you. It's something that I think we still have a long way to go with. But those are probably the main ones.
There is a very special concert airing, I guess, in 2 days from when this interview airs. That's probably got to be surreal to see a big, famous, world-class orchestra be performing something from your game.
Yeah, it's something that we've wanted to do kind of for a long time. And we have a group that pulled it off during the pandemic with the London Symphony Orchestra, which I always associate with these scores and movies that I've always loved. And seeing that and hearing it back, it is. I find music is a very particular like time travel device.
Yeah.
Where it takes you back to those moments. And Skyrim's music has always been a part of its identity. We start with music. We usually, again, we do concept art. We do interface. We
really?
Do music.
That's interesting.
Even Starfield, one of the first things we did was the music. And it sets, as you're drawing things and seeing it on the screen, you put it to the music. It gives you more of a complete feeling of this is the tone of the game. So Skyrim's music is one of the first things that we did.
Wow, I never knew that. That's a real, yeah. And I feel like a lot of other developers, that's something that comes later. Everybody's got a different process, but it totally makes sense that you're wanting to sort of, you're talking about that feel of the game and the tone of the game.
Right.
And that's where it comes from. That's really cool. Do you have a favorite Skyrim mod?
I hate picking favorites. So I don't want to
make somebody's day.
Well, there's a number I like. On the PC, the UI one is really, really good. There's the one I really, this is going to sound stupid. There's one I like where someone added fast travel markers when you bought a house. And it's something that would should really take like an hour. It's one of the things you think, why don't we do that? But there's so many that I like the ones that are more systemic. Now it's sort of, it's going to sound like a biased pick, but the stuff we did with Creation Club and working with those creators, the survival mode, fishing. Yeah. I really love when our developers here are working with people in the community and getting it out there. So I think those have been particularly impactful in the game.
Have you ended up hiring any of those people?
As a matter of fact, yes.
Yeah, I figured
yes, a good number of them.
It's like, why wouldn't you, right? Like,
look, it's something
we're... A lot of talent out there.
There's a lot of talent out there, something we're really passionate about. When you think about the legacy of our games, you know, one of the reasons we're sitting here 10 years later is because of our modding community.
Yeah.
Right? And what they've done with the game. So even though we did all the stuff and you kind of make it your own, you open up this menu and then there's this even larger list of things. Like, okay, how do you want to customize it? What do you want to do? And I think that's fundamental to what we want to do with games, where creators can do that. And I think us being active in trying to make it more than a hobby for them, where they can make it their career,
yeah,
I think is really, really good and something that we're going to continue to do.
So when you make a game this big, as big, so Skyrim, what I could find online, allegedly around 30 million copies of Skyrim, which is a...
It's a massive number. It's far more than that, actually.
It's far more than that. So, like...
Not that that's not an enormous number. But
it's still...
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah. Do you allow yourself to enjoy that at any point where you're like, wow, I made a thing that's one of probably the biggest... Helped make a thing that's one of the biggest video games of all time? Like, do you allow yourself to enjoy that, or is it just sort of like too abstract to even internalize?
I can't internalize that scale. But obviously the success of the game, what it's meant to a lot of people who play games, or it got them through tough times. We do things with the Make-A-Wish Foundation when people want to come here and see what we do.
Yeah.
So it's not Skyrim specific. It's more, I do feel a lot of pride, and I see it in the studio when you see your work really give so many people a lot of joy. And it's not just us goofing off making fantasy worlds, right? I do think the work, you know, has importance. I think entertainment is important to people's lives. And so that gives you a lot of pride in what you've been able to do with it and what you want to do in the future.
Are there any Easter eggs hiding in Skyrim that no one has found after 10
oh,
years
gosh.
That you want to talk about right now?
I can't imagine that's the case.
There's got to be something somewhere, right?
You know, there's probably dangling threads of cut content. But you know what? The community has been through all of our data so many times. I cannot imagine. There's nothing to my knowledge. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Fair enough. I mean, yeah, it is a very moddable, picked at game.
Yep.
So it does make sense. Now, all right, is there a favorite video game child? Is there a favorite Elder Scrolls game out of all of them? Because they're all, what I love about the series personally is that they're all different. They're
right.
like albums in a sense from the same band where, you know, there's other than like, you know, AC/DC where it's kind of the same album over and over, but you know, they each have their own totally different thing. They're not just straight numbered sequels. So I'm curious if any one Elder Scrolls game.
It's a great analogy, actually. It's a little bit. Actually, we've said that once or twice in the studio where we're going to do this. Like, what is that? Oh, this is our concept album. Then the band goes on tour and they drift back to playing the arena hits that you wanted. It's important to us. We've kind of avoided doing like direct sequels.
Yeah.
Which is why also they take so long. And that each of them does have its own identity. And there's something about all of them that we love. When someone says, it's usually the first one they play is their favorite. So like, you guys blew it after Morrowind. You simplified it. Like, and then if you played Oblivion, like, it was so much better than Skyrim. And we're okay with that. We say, like, doesn't that upset you? It's like, we made those games too. It's always the last one, right? So Skyrim, I think, particularly from, you know, a game flow perspective, a game in your hands that still feels really, really good today. It's probably my favorite as we sit here.
Yeah.
But there's things about, say, You know, I think a lot of the quests in Oblivion is some of our best questing. In Morrowind, I like the tone of the world where there are parts of it that are a lot stranger, where you feel a bit uncomfortable in it. And I think you can use that to your advantage.
Yeah.
What's a little bit more mysterious. I love the elegance. We'll go back. I love the elegance of Arena, the very first game. If you play it, it's such a simple game. It knows exactly. It's not a simple game, but there's elegance in its design, character system, the flow of it. So I think they each have something that's great about them.
For me, I dabbled a touch in Morrowind, but really Oblivion was my first one, and that's my answer.
Right.
So I'm like feeding right into your data set on that, because the moment when you step out into the open world in Oblivion is like an all-time like instant great gaming memory for me.
Yeah, and for the time, it's such a wow moment.
Yeah.
Given gaming at the time, I think if you go back and look at it, you're like, it's all right. but if you go back and play Morrowind, it can be difficult interface-wise. Some other game systems that are they're hard to wrap your hands around.
It is fair to say, I mean, I'm not going to fly 3,000 miles and not ask about Elder Scrolls 6 at least a little.
Sure, go ahead. Question. I get asked a lot.
But
I get asked in the house.
Yeah, it is fair to say that it's going to be roughly, probably 15 years between Elder Scrolls games, because you're busy with another little thing called Starfield, which we'll talk about in a minute as well.
People could do the math on what our schedules look like.
So, is that a good thing, do you think, or is that not ideal? Like, sort of as far as both creatively, but also for the health and success of a franchise that keeps the lights on in this
right.
in this awesome studio.
Well, look, I think that's a really great question, a way of putting it. You know, for me, when I look at franchises, is it vibrant? Okay, is Skyrim still is? Elder Scrolls Online is huge. It's one of the biggest online games in the world, and that's part of our company. Even though our studio isn't developing it, we work with them. I think they've done an absolutely phenomenal job. So when I look at the Elder Scrolls as a franchise, you know, is it healthy? Is it doing well? Yes, 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 yes. Would you plan to have the kind of gap we're having between Skyrim and the follow-up? I can't say that's a good thing, right? I wish I could wave a wand and the game that we want to make, and we have in our head, we're starting things on, just came out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But there's other things we want to do, right? Obviously, Fallout 4 was a huge success. We spent a lot of time on that. We wanted to, you know, go into online with Fallout 76. We felt doing something like Starfield, something we wanted to do something else for a long time and play in a new universe. Kind of like, well, if not now, I'm going back in time. We started in right after Fallout 4, so 2015, end of it. If not now, when? And I felt like the when, if we didn't do it then, the when could be never. And so we felt pretty good with where Elder Scrolls was as a franchise, particularly with Elder Scrolls Online, that, hey, now's time we can do Starfield. You know, that being said, everything takes longer than we would like as well, but we want to make sure we get it right. And, you know, hopefully Elder Scrolls 6, you don't want to say like, hey, that's worth that kind of wait, but that it does stand up to the series as it has been in a really big, impactful way for when it comes out.
It would seem like just working on one Elder Scrolls game after the next might get creatively exhausting. And then you guys got the Fallout IP and were able to alternate. And it would seem like that would be creatively healthy for the team for both games to go back and forth. And now with what will be such a big gap between Elder Scrolls 5 and Elder Scrolls 6 is, you know, will there be kind of a little extra creative rejuvenation there when you guys really dive fully back in?
Well, our games take so long, and we do have Fallout as well, so that does keep the creative juices flowing. To your point, though, even for us, it had been so long. And we are doing some work that you do feel, it feels like there's an extra spark, that like we miss it as well, and the things we want to do with it feel very, very fresh. But I could say that about Starfield is all new.
Right.
But it was so new that you had no basis. You're kind of starting from scratch. And that's also had its own challenges. You know, what does a spaceship look like? we spent forever on that till we felt we really got it where, hey, this feels unique. This feels like this game. When you go into a franchise, a sequel, so to say, you have that basis of what you've done before, how people reacted to it. And then, but you still, for us, I like to, you know, wipe the slate clean and say, okay, what does it mean to be a fantasy role-playing game now? The kind of games you want to do where you step into a virtual world. What does that mean? Don't think about making a sequel.
Right.
Start fresh. And that's a great kind of exercise for all of us. Really, really energizing.
Well, I guess what about Fallout while we're talking about it? Because that almost feels like, you know, you've got Starfield, you have a release date that's in, I'm going to call it pencil on the calendar. You've penciled it right now. I don't think no game release dates get written in ink anymore until like they've.
Yeah, we wrote it pretty hard in that trailer. So.
Well, I want to ask you about that in a minute, but.
Like some ink, but. Yeah.
Okay, well.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
We'll get to that in a second,
sure.
But then you've seemingly publicly committed to Elder Scrolls VI being the thing after Starfield.
Sure.
So does Fallout just go to the back of the line? As far as mainline, you know, yes, there's 76, but as far as the mainline Fallout,
right.
Is that going to the back of the line, or is that a thing where you've now got an entire Xbox family at your back and people
sure.
like In Exile and Obsidian? And is there a scenario where you hand Fallout off?
I don't see, Fallout's really part of our DNA here.
Yeah.
We've worked with other people from time to time. I can't say what's going to happen. You know, we have a one pager on Fallout 5, what we want to do. Again, if I could wave my hand and say, have
right.
that out. You know, I'd like to find a way to accelerate what we do. But I can't really say today or commit to anything what's going to happen when, other than, hey, our cadence is Starfield and then Elder Scrolls 6.
Because you guys have always been, BGS is, your team is it one team or is there more than one, like,
I like to view
team?
It as one big team. And then we have groups that focus on one game. So you could look at the Fallout 76 team, mostly based in Austin
yeah.
right now. And that's a full team that you would put on a game, but they work on other things. And a lot of people here in Rockville worked on 76 and Montreal and Dallas as well. And so we've always sort of done it that way so that we can move people between projects, and everybody knows, like everybody knows they're gonna work on Elder Scrolls 6 in some fashion. And I think that's really, really good for the health of the studio.
Yeah.
And the games themselves, where we're able to bring expertise onto it at the right times, not burn people out, such.
But is it fair to say then that Todd Howard's team that is responsible for Elder Scrolls, Mainline Fallout, and Starfield works on mostly like one game at a time?
We're focused on one at a time.
Yeah.
We tend to, you know, pre-production for me, I mean, I like it to be like 2 years. So you might have a small group on it and do something and then say, let's pause, let's come back. I think that makes a difference what we're doing. When we're really going full bore, where most of the studio is on something, that can be anywhere from 12 months to 24 months. But it's true the way you said it,
That
we're going to focus on that. There's more overlap, I think, than do a game, stop, do a game.
So Starfield is written in ink for November 11th, 2022, per your words, which seemingly would indicate that it's in pretty good shape as far as...
We have our challenges. I can't sit here and say, you know, it's a very, very ambitious game.
Yeah.
Look, we were, you know, confident about the date when we put that out there. But our main focus is just making the best game that we possibly can. And it's a very, very ambitious game. And we've been through this a number of times, so.
Your team's last big game, because again, 76 was Austin.
Well, it was us as well, so, but yeah.
But
I know you're headed.
But yeah, you know, we're on a new console generation,
right.
And like the tech gap that you talked about, like going from Morrowind to Oblivion, we're probably going to be seeing that really again with Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6, right? Compared to Skyrim.
It's been a huge jump. It's probably our biggest ever. I could say Morrowind to Oblivion, that had been our biggest. This now feels bigger to us. And we felt it was time, and we could really take advantage of the new systems, you know, redoing the renderer and the basic underlying guts of the engine itself.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the results on the screen, we're very, very happy with. It's taking us longer, as always, than we would like, particularly during the pandemic to put those parts together. And whenever you do an engine overhaul, we're still making data, right? And so we're still doing a lot of art and design and levels and spaces and things like that. And then the engine is changing, and figuring out when those sync up is one of the great challenges that all game developers deal with. So we're kind of in the midst of that. We had been, and we're coming through it.
So you kind of have, you know, the new tech also opens up some new options. And I mean, it's been really cool to see these modern consoles really embrace a lot more PC-like choice in terms of give me, you know, 4K ray traced, dial up everything but 30 frames per second, or, you know, maybe dial down my effects and I want that 60 frames per second. What is your opinion? How do you like to play your games? Would you prefer to go like Starfield, just crank visual fidelity as high as it can go to fully immerse yourself in that world, and at the trade-off of, you know, some frame rate, or are you more of like a frame rate guy and go ahead and, you know, I'll take a little step down on the visuals?
It depends on the game. I think for our games, I'm more of a 30 frames a second fidelity person. If I'm playing like a Forza or something, or a sports game where I can really, I think it matters for what I'm experiencing, I prefer 60. But for our style game, I honestly feel 30 feels great. And I'd rather have all the little bits and shiny pixels and be able to pick up the cups. And, you know, I like that level of immersion. But that doesn't mean that, you know, that's for everybody.
Right. I'm totally with you for whatever it's worth. Yeah. I want to soak myself in that universe that you created. And it's nice to have that choice, because like with Oblivion, we didn't, you know, in Skyrim, there wasn't that choice at the time. It was, well, it's going to be, 720p, and we'll get it as close to 30 as often as we can.
And frankly, even resolution, you know, I think most people can't tell. You know, does it have to be true 4K? It's like, okay, what's the overall image quality? What does it look like when you sit in front of your PC or on your sofa? And just how immersive is it? And so that's usually, so even on resolution, we'll, you know, there are various systems we have and most games have for, hey, if the action's getting too heavy, it can dynamically lower it. And yeah. you generally can't tell unless Digital Foundry tells you so. They do a great job.
They do a great right? job, yes.
And so generally you're like, okay, if the player really can't tell if this isn't affecting their experience in that way, it's a good trade-off.
So let me circle back now to this 11-11-22 thing.
Sure. Which I'm regretting.
You're really you like calling yeah. your shit. It's like a Ruthian like.
No, I was just saying, we put it in a trailer. Like it's on the screen. It's not, wasn't penciled, but.
Well.
I can't, you know.
What is your deal with 11-11? Is that like a lucky, is 11 a lucky number for you? Just, I mean, I'm being serious. Is it like your lucky number? Because you seem
a little bit.
Yeah. And that's cool.
I like it visually. Well, Skyrim, yeah. I was 11-11-11. If you were here in the company, there were a lot of release dates being bandied around, and I was unmovable. I was like, this is the perfect date. Come on. And then as it came around to Starfield, we lined things up and adding bufferware things. It kind of landed, you know, around there. I was like, hey, this would feel really, really good.
Yeah.
There's a weird wrinkle in it.
Okay.
Which is in Europe versus North America, they flip the days.
It's true.
So there's always this, when you're doing advertising stuff, if the day and the month are the same, you don't have to change it, which is this great added benefit. I thought it looked really cool in the trailer too. So
you feel good about it then? You're.
I don't know if I ever feel good. I'm usually confident. You know, this is how things line up. But we want to do the best job we can, and there's still so much to do.
Yeah.
I feel good about the game.
Yeah.
And we're confident about the date. But
is Starfield like more or less done, and you're just polishing the hell out of it to get ready for 11-11 or?
No, we're at a state where we can play the whole game.
Yeah.
But again, there's so much to do. It's a very, very ambitious game, and we're not going to let off the gas there. And given how the world's gone, it's hard to project exactly what's going to happen when. And we honestly just, we do our best.
Yeah.
And it's been, look, in the grand scheme of the world, we have it great. But creatively getting together and making those creative decisions and looking at a game together has definitely been challenging for all game developers during this time. And you see that. We're a little bit fortunate that, you know, the leads on the project and a lot of our staff have worked together for so long that our ability to do that, whether we're sitting at home and we have other studios. We'd always kind of done remote work where we're talking to somebody in Montreal or Texas. And so those things have worked out really, really, really well for us. For us, it's really, is the work show on the screen? And it really, really is. So
the band has been together for a while, right?
Have,
to come
yeah.
back
so
to that. Yeah. So it's,
we have that resilience in dealing with unknowns. We've dealt with it really on every game.
Let's tie it together here. Would you say has Skyrim influenced Starfield at all? I know you did a game in between that with Fallout 4, but you know, you're creating a new thing with Starfield. Is there a Skyrim or Elder Scrolls influence in it?
I think it's part of our DNA, right? So those things that we like, being able to touch the world and, you know, what are you looting from people and how do the factions? So I think there is more Skyrim in terms of game structure in Starfield. Now that you mention it, the way the factions work, the skill system is really, 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 really like the skill system in Starfield. And it borrows a bit from things we've done in Fallout and Elder Scrolls. So I think this is part of our DNA. You're going to see those hallmarks in kind of anything we do that is, as you say, kind of a mainline Bethesda game.
I think some people want to hear that Starfield is Skyrim in space, and other people, that's the last thing they want to hear, and they want it to be something completely new.
Skyrim in space? I say in all the best ways.
In all the best ways. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm also kind of curious how Indiana Jones fits into everything.
Sure.
So you're anybody that may not be familiar, you are announced as being the executive producer of Machine Games in the Bethesda family. Machine Games is Indiana Jones game. So like, what exactly does that mean?
Well, I can give you sort of the background of it. First, when I executive produce things, that's a game that I'm kind of checking in on. Right? It's not a daily thing. It might be once a week. It might be once a month, depending on the state of the game. And then, so there's a number of things I kind of executive produce. And then if I'm directing a game, that's more of a daily activity.
Right.
the Indiana Jones game, that I am like, I love Indiana Jones. People who know me, like, I'm obsessed with Indiana Jones. It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark is the best thing ever put to film. No debate. And for a long time, I had met some people at Lucas way back in the day and said, oh, I have this Indiana Jones game in my head. And I got chatting with them and they're like, that's awesome. You should come out and pitch it. So I went out to Lucasfilm and I pitched this game and we almost made it. This was like 10, 12 years ago.
Okay.
And it kind of, obviously we were doing other things. Like we didn't really necessarily have the bandwidth.
Right.
Like, hey, Todd, what team? Like, I'll figure it out. And you know, hey, fast forward to kind of current day. And now they're part of Disney and they're starting to license. I got in a conversation with somebody there that mm-hmm. I know, John Drake,
who was
at Sony,
yeah.
Love John. And we got to chatting with, and I said, oh, I have this Indiana Jones game. And he was like, tell me more. I'm like, is this possible? And so internally, you know, really love the work Machine Games does. Everybody knows each other really, really well. And I mentioned to them, like, hey, is this something that might interest you? There might be a possibility
here. They worked on Riddick. They've done licensed things very well
Riddick,
before.
I think the Riddick on the original Xbox is unbelievable.
It's
like, you look at the tech level of that game at the time before Doom, which is also one of, like,
yeah.
It's amazing.
It's unbelievable.
It's
yeah.
incredible. And the work they've done on Wolfenstein and scenes and characters, I just think they're incredible developers. And so I brought up to them, like, hey, something that might interest you. And they said, absolutely. And they're good at the Nazi stuff, right? So, they're making the game. I'm involved creatively. Like, hey, what's the game going to be? I had this original story and we've worked on it sort of together. So I spend a little bit of time on it. They're running with it. They're doing an amazing job. And so I'm just happy to lend a hand and be involved.
Something else that's happened since you and I last chatted. You interviewed, or you were in a little conversation with Elon Musk at E3 in 2019,
sure.
The last E3 that we had. The E3 to end all E3s, as it turned out.
Oh, I hope not. I hope it comes back.
I hope I'm with you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hopefully getting back in 2022. I'm just kind of curious how that came about. Like, what was the... Because and also, what was that experience like for you? I know you're a Tesla customer yourself.
Sure.
As am I. But, like, how do you end up on a stage in a conversation with Elon Musk?
Yeah, we know each other a little bit and had traded messages. You know, he likes video games. He loves Fallout. I like space.
Shelter is in, you can play it in your Tesla.
Right. I like space. I like cars. And so we would talk about those things. And I'd been out to SpaceX. And it was something that Jeff Keighley, who runs that stage show there, tries to really put together interesting groups. And it was something we had tried to do, didn't work out timing-wise, actually, in some previous E3s. And he was available and wanted to do it. And, you know, it was very, really kind of cool moment for all of us.
You going to sneak any SpaceX Easter eggs into Starfield?
We'll see.
We'll see. Fair enough. All right, to wrap this up, just kind of final thoughts. Skyrim's 10th anniversary, like, what does that mean to you? When you stop and think about the fact that this is being celebrated and it's still a vibrant thing and that people still love it and play it 10 years on.
You know, it's surreal. We have a lot of pride. We feel very, like I said, very, very blessed to be in this position. Sort of think about how many games have been able to do that or have like a 10th anniversary even edition.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't know the list, but I was sort of, I can't think of many. And so, you know, it's really a testament to, I think, our fans, really. You know, they're the ones who've kept it alive, who keep, you know, the memes going on the internet and talking about and putting videos up, making mods, sharing it. And it's really, even though it's not a multiplayer game, there is this social element to it that is so strong that we're just so overjoyed to kind of be a part of that and have it splash on us. So
do you, social elements and multiplayer have kind of creeped in and infused into almost everything now? Is it, you know, are you still feel really, really strongly about the importance of a quality single player experience like Starfield? And is
very much, yes.
Your games will still stay as solo experiences?
Absolutely. I think that's where, you know, even in 76, once we, you know, added the Wastelanders and that kind of questing stuff, the amount of people that want to play it as a solo experience is very, very strong. It's part of who we are. It's what we love about games. That being said, there are various ways that you can talk about adding social elements to a game that I don't think take away from that.
Yeah.
And we've dabbled with some of that and not put it out, or things on paper, or things that we'd like to try in our game. So I don't want to rule that out. 76 has really ended up being a great experience for us and a great learning one. But our passion is behind who are you going to be? This world is for you. Go make it your own.
Well, Todd Howard, happy 10th anniversary.
Thank you.
To the Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, the game that surrounds us here at Bethesda. You can play it in the anniversary edition on pretty much all platforms, I think. Or at least the next generation platforms have a few extra.
I believe it's on everything.
Bells and whistles. Yeah, it's on your refrigerator. It's on your toaster. It's
with
everywhere.
Alexa, it is.
Yeah, it's everywhere you want to play it. Todd Howard, thank you so much.
Thanks. Great to see you again.
Great to see you. And for more from the best, brightest, and most interesting minds in the games industry, keep it tuned every month or so to right here on IGN Unfiltered.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.